Hello and welcome everyone to episode number 480 of The Riverfront, considered by some to be the world's most dangerous podcast, where we will discuss all things Cincinnati Reds and usually some other nonsense as well. Chad, as you may have noticed, is out in the streets trying to drum up support for Kevin Newman's All-Star campaign, so it's a Young Kings only episode today. I am your host, Nate Dotson, and I'm super pumped to have a couple legends helping me out this evening. They really need no introduction, but they're going to get one anyway. So batting leadoff is your host of the Late Night Red Show, baseball card aficionado, new father, Drew Stubbs' best friend, Tim Daniel. How you doing, Tim?
Drew Stubbs' best friend. Is that why he hasn't answered my text since he's been on the show?
Yeah, he's going to make you want it. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Also joining us today is former big league ball player, current backyard grill master, the women's pet, the men regret, Carlos Guevara. How are things shaking out down in Texas, Carlos?
They're going good, man. They're going pretty good. Got the kids finishing up school, so we'll be busy with that here pretty soon all summer long. But, interesting times.
I love it. Thank you guys both for coming on here. I'm excited to talk some baseball with you. But before we dive headfirst into that, the news and the topics of the week, please take a minute if you haven't already. Subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on your preferred podcast app. All the cool kids are doing it, and you do want to be one of the cool kids. Also, huge shouts to our Patreon family, without whom none of this would be possible. You too can join the Slack channel at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. And for as little as $2 a month, you can talk shop with us. We're on top of some pretty rad perks. We're in that private Slack channel, flapping our gums about the Reds, Bengals, movies, TV shows, pretty much all the nonsense going on in the world. So without further ado, let's hop into it, guys. Quick vibes check. This is the last episode of May, I think. And so that puts us 2 months into the season. How are we feeling about the Reds right now? Tim, you go first.
So I will start off by saying they're about where I thought they'd be as far as record. I know a lot of people were kind of like, well, they're going to lose 100 games again. I never thought that was going to be the case. I'm enjoying the season knowing what they are. I didn't have this, like, they're going to surprise people and win 84, 85 games kind of thing going, but I also didn't have this, like, they might win 6 games by through the first 2 months either kind of thing that some people were putting in the socials. But I'm having fun. You know, I think big picture, you got to be happy with what Nick Senzel's been able to do. I know he's had some ups and downs. Having Matt McClain up, seeing Hunter Green kind of grow and progress. I know the other guys have been either injured or in and out a little bit. But in the bullpen being shockingly better than we thought they were. Not saying they're good, but shockingly better than we thought they were. I'm having fun. I don't necessarily feel like this team is like when everyone's like, you know, they're 7 games out. If they just bring all these guys up, they're going to make a run at the division. I'm not there, but I'm enjoying the process. I think it's been pretty fun so far this year to watch them play on a nightly basis because they try and they play hard.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think that's kind of been a theme of the season so far is that these guys are fun to watch. They're fighting every day. Lots of good, late game rallies, a lot of easy things to root for. How about you, Carlos? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines as Tim. You know, record-wise, where they're about where we all thought they would be, but the way that they got there, probably not so much. You know, we all thought their starting pitching was going to be their, you know, their top three guys. We thought that was going to be one of their biggest, advantages over teams, and that certainly hasn't been the case. But we've had a lot of players come step up and, you know, hit the ball well. The offense has done well. You know, we still have our frustrating times out there during the games that we, you know, get mad about for a little bit. But all in all, you know, each game is pretty fun because they are trying very hard. It just sucks they don't have the support that they need to be competitive and to make me a believer in that this is going to actually maybe be a push to possibly a wild card because, I mean, honestly, they're not that far away, you know, add a couple of veterans via our free backs. Agency, and we could have had something here. You know, we could have maybe started with a fourth and fifth starter. Could have been fun, but it is what it is. We're here. Hopefully some of these young guys get called up a little sooner than later, especially the ones with pop, because we need to see some home runs at Great American Ballpark. That's what it was built for, and we're not really getting that.
Ones that hit home runs, particularly off of, over scoreboards in Syracuse tonight as we're recording?
From whatever side of the plate you want to choose, like whatever.
Yeah, about 30 minutes before we started recording today, Ellie De La Cruz hit his 900th home run of the season. This one went 700 feet at 300 miles per hour off the bat. The guy is he's unreal. I don't think he has anything left to prove, but it's like Carlos said, we're the NL Central is bad, but as a product of that, the Reds are not that far from contention. A quick look at the standings. They are, unfortunately, back in last place, but they are only 4.5 games out of second place, and they are only 4 games, I think, out of the wild card. So
it's been, man, I've enjoyed the new schedule, though, like not playing the Cardinals 107 times.
Yeah.
Pirates, like, you know, getting to see everybody in the league, that's been pretty fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, especially because you're getting a lot more of these like 2-game sets where like you don't have to worry about the Red Sox kicking your ass 3 nights in a row, like they, like night for next week. You can just kind of be like 2 and done and get out of there. So I really do dig that.
Like,
as well.
That really helps. That really like helps it. That helps a bullpen a lot. You know, you don't, you know, the hitters don't get to see you all that much. You know, they get to see you maybe twice in a series, and then they're not going to see you again for a long time. So that really helps out a bullpen. It really does, especially a young and experienced one like the Reds have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought about that angle before, but that's got to be true. One thing that leads with a more balanced schedule is, you know, more interleague play. And the Yankees came to town to close out last week. And it was a competitive series, but Aaron Boone's return did not go the way Reds fans really wanted to. It was a 3-game sweep. I guess just a few quick notes on how that went. Like I said, the games were all fairly close. The Reds were just kind of outmatched. Game one, Ben Lively pitched a strong 5 2/3 innings with 8 strikeouts. Aaron Judge did what Aaron Judge does and hit a home run on the first pitch he saw. That guy's pretty good at baseball. Also in that game one game, there was some sticky stuff going on. Are the Yankees cheaters?
No.
Carlos, you got any thoughts on that?
Man, I really don't think so. I don't think that guy's that dumb to cheat right after their guy just got suspended.
Like, yeah,
it really is that rosin and sweat, it reacts differently to everyone. The humidity that's in, I don't know what the weather, I don't remember what the weather was like in Cincinnati, but you know, you get any humid weather and you put rosin and sweat, that's sticky. You know, yeah. Like whenever, you know, back in the day when I used to play, I wouldn't use anything but rosin and, you know, basically just my sweat, saliva from my mouth. But if I went to the West Coast, I would have to use bullfrog and pine tar just so I could get the grip on the ball. It wasn't to like make anything extra nasty. It was just,
I wanted you to let me know to
be safe.
What bullfrog is.
Sunscreen.
Oh.
For whatever reason, that one works the best. Like, you know, we definitely experimented with them all, but that one seems to be the one that was always carried around in the bullpen bag and worked the best.
Some players use deer antler spray. Carlos used bullfrog.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever gets you there. Yeah, the Reds.
So I know, to answer the question, I really don't think that he was cheating. It was just one of those things, man. Like, but that explanation that they gave David Bell, oh my God, get out of here with that.
I mean, it was
if you're gonna make him go wash his hands, throw him out.
Yeah,
it's gotta be it. It's gotta be
it. I agree. Yeah. I was at the Guevara Park that night. I mean, I wasn't playing, obviously, but it was definitely hot that night.
Like, your bat's corked. Go get another one and then come back out and hit. What? It's not the way it works.
Was it Chris Sabo when he got busted where like all the bouncy balls fell out of the bat and went all over the field?
What?
Yeah.
I don't know about this.
So I think he tried to do the whole Sammy Sosa thing where he said it was in batting practice that he used a certain bat for entertainment. And so he like swings it during the game. This is his second run with the Reds, mind you. This isn't like 1990. Hits a ball and all these bouncy balls fly out of the wood and just go all over the field.
I remember being young enough, and I loved me some Chris Sabo. I totally believed it, too. Pre-social media, obviously. I'm like, yeah, this is a mistake. Every team has bouncy ball bats just laying around for laughs, for giggles.
Is that why they sent him off to Australia, the coach? Or where is he going?
India.
India.
Yeah.
Mumbai, actually.
Good luck, Mr. Sabo. Crush it. The Reds could have used a couple of those bouncy ball bats during this series, especially in game two. They only got five hits. Luke Weaver pitched a very Luke Weaver-ish type of game, 4.1 innings and four earned runs. I don't have a ton to say about that one. That was pretty boring baseball. Game three, very interesting Hunter Green game. Tim, you kind of mentioned this earlier. Seven innings pitched, four earned runs, 10 strikeouts, three walks, and was bit by the home run again. But depending on when you were watching, he either looked dominant or kind of up to his old tricks. I'm interested to get your all's takes. Tim, what do you think about Hunter's last performance?
I thought he pitched really well. There was definitely some stuff where you could definitely tell he was tiring out, and they probably left him in a little too long. If you look at Anthony Volpe's double that leads to the fourth run, I think that probably would have been all right, that's enough. Volpe, it wasn't necessarily a bad pitch. He threw that pitch earlier in the game, it looked just fine, but I just think he was running out of gas at that point. And I can see the argument of he's 23 years old, he's got to learn to pitch later in the games. But in a situation like that, where you completely blew game two, you had that game in your pocket and you just were horribly managed in that game. Extra innings, runner on second base, for the love of God, you don't pitch to Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say it again.
Yeah, I'm sorry for glossing over that. That does need to be mentioned.
Yeah, I just got to get it off my chest again because I'm so sick of, I'm so irritated by it. And then the way that game was managed after Hunter just didn't make any sense. But when he was hitting his spots, he was tremendous, but I think he just got tired at the end. You could kind of tell because, and of course, Great American Ballpark being Great American Ballpark, on that Gleyber Torres home run, probably the only two stadiums that's a homer are GABP and Yankee Stadium. So
that wasn't the only questionable home run that we'll touch on since we last recorded an episode at the Riverfront. But I didn't notice Hunter was throwing that changeup a decent bit again, trying to mix that in there. Carlos, I know developing that third pitch is something that you've talked about a lot that Hunter needs to sort of hone in on. What did you see from Hunter this last time out?
It's tough, man, to say. He's so hard to read whenever he's out there. Whenever he has, you feel like he pitches well, and then you look at the box score, and it's 4 2/3 and four runs. And I'm like, what? How did this happen? But it's just, a couple of pitches here and there. And I think it's just because of the lack of that third pitch that, can keep hitters off balance. He's throwing it a lot more. Mailey's catching him, right?
He caught him that game. Yeah.
And I think he's caught him the last couple. And he definitely calls it a lot more than Stevenson, which is great. And, he threw a couple, I think he threw a middle on a righty on righty that they might've hit for some damage, which I can live with that, man, because that's really the only way you're going to learn how to throw it in a game. You can throw it in the bullpen all you want, but I promise you it's not anything near the same as having the confidence to throw it in the game with the runner on second base or a one-run game. It's totally different. And that's the way he's going to learn, and that's what the season's for. At times, I'm a little rough on him just because, all of the hype that he's had coming in, that's partially, the media's fault. Once he's drafted, it should just be a wash, in my opinion, but that's not the way it is. That's not the way the politics work in the game. So it's like, okay, we're almost in the middle of year two here. Let's go. Let's get going. Let's start being dominant. But I don't know. Hopefully, and also I think the pitch clock has something to do with it too, man, because, I read an article the other day about how they were talking about the time in between innings. That's I never thought about that at the beginning, but that time in between innings is a lot shorter now. Even at home watching, you try to go to the restroom and you come back, it's starting already. And then imagine if there's a quick 1-2-3 inning. Oh boy, that's tough on a pitcher. That is really tough. Before the pitch clock, a 1-2-3 inning was tough after you threw 20, 25 pitches. But then to come back after a quick 1-2-3 after that, oof, that's tough. That's how injuries happen.
What would you say is more difficult for a pitcher, coming back after a quick 1-2-3 or having to sit for a long one when your team puts up a bunch of runs in the bottom half?
A 1-2-3.
Yeah.
For sure, no doubt.
Not getting that rest, that recovery. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is something that people are going to like gasp at or find unacceptable of me to say. But kind of going off what Carlos was saying earlier, if you look at last year, when he hit his stride, it was the second half of the year. I almost wonder if he's kind of one of those guys that like, and this, you know, he can't be if he's going to be the ace of the team, obviously. But I almost wonder if he's one of those guys that like it takes until like the middle of June to find his rhythm. And that's when he goes. And again, we're going off of 1 year of a sample size here, but I almost wonder if like that's what he is right now.
Oh, that's a long time. You know, Luis Castillo always, you know, pretty much struggled out of the gate. Mm-hmm. You know, certain pitchers, a lot of relievers usually have, you know, need more time to throw their pitch in a game and develop it. But a starter 2 months in, that's a long time.
I know. Yeah. Like I said, I know I'm not trying to like say like keep an eye out for it, but I think maybe, you know, he is 23 and he is still, I mean, he's very mature behind his age, obviously in interviews, but I do think that's probably part of the process. But yeah, he does definitely need to like moving forward. May, it needs to be like hit the ground running with him. I agree.
Yeah.
And it's important to keep in mind that he had very few professional innings under his belt in the minors before starting last year in the big. So we'll keep an eye out. It's great to see him go 7 innings. He has had trouble going deep in the game. So that was fantastic to see. And
for sure,
we'll continue monitoring the big three as we go on. Only one last note I had on that series, or a couple last notes. Matt McClain and Spencer Steer, only players to have multi-hit games in that series. And one other note is that Anthony Rizzo can go suck it. Still hate that guy. Still torments the Reds. Get out of my life, Anthony Rizzo.
I mean, give him props. He didn't start a fight this time.
That's true. You know, it's a low bar for Anthony Rizzo, but
yeah.
So after that Yankees series, the Reds came home for a 4-game set against, I guess already, they put a 4-game set against St. Louis, the hated, stupid Cardinals. And after a very deflating game 4, the Reds split that series 2-2. Let's see where to start here. The Reds won the first game on a Nick Senzel sack fly walk-off. That was pretty fun. The bats came alive after a quiet Yankee series. Spencer Steer dropped his 2-run dong all over the Cardinals, which I enjoyed typing that out and saying it. Brandon Williams had lost a little bit of magic after his fantastic first outing. Gave up 4 runs in 4.1 innings. Game 2, Matt McClain hits his first bomb as Cincinnati Red. We'll talk more about him here in a little bit. Reds got a bunch of hits, scored a bunch of runs, but my guy, Graham Ashcraft, got wrecked. So that was a rough one. But game 2, they bounced back, 18 hits and a 10-3 win. Ben Lively was great again, which is wild to me. 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 8 Ks. Matt McClain goes yard again. Every Red got a hit in the game except for my guy, Jose Barrero. And then things ended with a whimper as the Cards ran out of AAA lineup and the Reds got shut down 2-1 with no run scored by either team until the 8th inning. But there was a strong Luke Weaver performance, 6.1 innings, 6 Ks, only 3 hits. Carlos, what were some of your big takeaways from the Cardinal series besides Spencer Steer dropping his dong?
That I'm going to go out on a leap and say that Matt McClain's the best Reds player right now. I mean that with all seriousness. I think he has the edge over Jonathan India because he can play a very good shortstop.
Yeah, he can.
He's very fast. I think he might be able to beat me in a race. He's looked pretty impressive, man. He looks comfortable out there too. It's like this is a second or third year. He looks great. Ben Lively and was Weaver throwing tonight. That was like, what's going on?
Back-to-back qualities. Yeah,
I'll take it. Like, it's been cool. It's been fun. Ben Lively's definitely my favorite starter right now. Each time he pitches, I go through a pack of Marlboro Reds with no filters, just in support of him.
That's right. He might be a lucky. He might be a lucky strike guy. I don't know.
He might be.
What are your quick thoughts? Your quick 30,000 foot view thoughts on Ben Lively? Because what he's doing looks repeatable to me. I mean, some of the advanced stuff looks fine. I don't know. Like, he looks good.
It's tough. Somebody like him who hadn't been in the league in a while, and then, you know, he's got decent stuff, but we'll see. You know, these next, you know, three starts, we'll see how real it is, because there's a lot more film on him, what he likes to do. That's the league makes the adjustments. So we'll see. Happy for him, though. It's been fun to watch. It's been really cool.
Awesome. He's had a pretty incredible journey coming back. I should say that Kyle Kapler, one of our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, he did ask the question, is Ben Lively a guy? I said, I know small sample size and that, but he looks in total control and comfortable when he's in the game. And stats and advanced metrics are promising. For every Connor Overton, there's a Dan Straley. And is when I read that last part that I love this question by Kyle. I mean, how different could things shake out if the Reds actually found somebody in Ben Lively? And I don't assume that he's going to be a top three rotation guy. I certainly don't assume that Weaver is. They never really have been. But if you can get one of those guys to be that that rotational depth or the back end of the rotation guy, that could really change the trajectory of this team. Tim, what jumped out to you during this Yankee or Cardinals series?
That the Cardinals suck.
Yeah, we didn't spend enough time hating on the Cardinals. I apologize to all of our loyal listeners.
I understand. I understand it was a 2-2 split, and I understand one of those games they won pretty big because Graham Ashcraft struggled. But I said this last year, Carlos, didn't I? Like, they're not impressive after Goldschmidt and Arenado. Like, I know they got Wilson Contreras and all that drama, but if you look at them and after you go the first three, I think the Reds have a better lineup. Like, I think, you know, when you get to Paul DeJong versus Matt McClain, you get to, you know what I mean? Like, after Arenado and Goldie and Contreras, you're like, well, this is pretty comparable. That team just had more opportunity to get better players, obviously, but I'm not blown away by them. Like, you know, Carlos and I were together last year and we watched him together for a 3-game set in July. And I said to him, I was like, this team's awful. Like, how is this team winning the division? Obviously Goldie and Arenado are awesome, but you know, like, I don't think this is the St. Louis Cardinals, obviously this year, especially not, but I don't think Marmol's a good manager. I don't think he managed these games off fleet very well at all. That team stinks, and the Reds should have won all three. Well, should have at least taken three or four.
Yeah, they don't have good starting pitching. You know, their lineup.
Steven Matz is terrible.
Yeah, their bullpen, it's shaky. They're not that great. No,
they have way less neck tattoos this year too, which is something that I've been noticing.
That's a plus, looking though. From afar.
Yeah. Plus for Reds fans, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's spend another couple minutes talking about Matt McClain. That's been the biggest news in Cincinnati these last few weeks. Just a quick rundown. He's in 8 games, 37 plate appearances. So every single asterisk and caveat there could possibly be. Batting 281 with a 378 OBP, 594 slugging, and a 152 OPS plus. The guy's got speed. He is playing a strong shortstop. That 13 pitch at bat, even though it ended in a strikeout against, I think that was Jordan Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Was really, really impressive. I did enjoy that great piece by Trent Rosecrans, where he admitted that it was a bad call by the ump and he should have struck out looking.
Okay. Yeah, it was a good bat after he struck out the first time.
Yeah.
So take away those first three pitches. After that, it was a really good at bat.
When
I read that article, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, it wasn't like a borderline pitch either. It was like almost right down the middle, and he called a ball.
He said, yeah, when I saw that again, I was a little surprised. But the kid's approach has been great. The hustle's been out of this world. I mean, his first game in Cincinnati, first or second, I don't remember. He hits a a single that should have just been a single and then scores a run on a single that he had no business scoring on. The guy is just balls to the wall nonstop. And I love it. And I guess it sounds obvious, and it is obvious, but I just never thought about it this way, or at least I hadn't yet. You don't just add when you get a productive hitter in the lineup. You don't just get a little bit better. You also subtract whatever flotsam was floating around, you know, the Henry Ramoses, you know, Will Benson, who I still have some faith in, but has not shown it at all yet. Even Jose Barrera, who I'm a fan of. Like, you take those guys out and you add Matt McCain's in. It just makes me excited to see what he can become as a part of the future Reds teams, and also what this lineup's going to look like once Ellie De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion strands and Noelvi Marte's, like these guys who are real hitters and guys with power, which is kind of weird. It's almost like this team needs that. So I don't know. I couldn't be any higher on what we've seen from Matt McClain so far. Tim, you got any final thoughts on Mr. McClain?
I think the one thing that really jumped out to me that you nor Carlos didn't necessarily, because you guys spoke true praise and everything you said is 100% accurate. I'm really blown away. And again, we are really just talking about a week of playing Major League Baseball. I'm well aware as we're having this conversation. But I'm really blown away by his ability to hit the ball all over the field. Mm-hmm. I know there's that really funny home run he had last night where it bounced out of out of Mercado's glove, but that was an opposite field hit still. So I'm looking at a spray chart right now on Baseball Savant, and he already has 4 hits the opposite way. He has 2 hits to dead center and only a couple pull hits, and he has an infield single, obviously. I think his approach is fantastic, like you guys mentioned. I don't know if the Reds have really consistently had guys who could do that. Like Joey, obviously, is, you know, when he was Joey in his prime, was always hitting the ball all over the field. And I'm not saying Matt McClain's going to be Joey Votto, though if he was, that'd be pretty terrific. But it's really nice to have that again, who's like, you can't shift either way against him because you might be really hurting your defense more than helping him.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I'm glad you brought that up. That opposite field power has been fun to watch. Carlos?
That hit and run, was it today or yesterday?
I think it was yesterday.
McClain in India. Like, that was like, oh, man. That's fun. That's fun baseball right there. I mean, he had that bag stolen anyway, and then he just – it looked like he poked it that way, like, on purpose. I know they tried to do it on purpose, but it looked like it didn't take a whole lot of effort for him to go that way. There was still something behind the ball, you know. There was some still velo behind it. And then, I mean, you add Ellie after that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun, man.
Yeah, man. And even Spencer Steer. Got a 110 OPS plus in the season. He's on a bit of a heater right now, too. Like,
can we move him up in the lineup a little bit, please?
Yeah, yeah.
David, if you're listening to this.
And my only pushback on that would be like, you know, I feel like the way Tyler Stevenson has been hitting, he needs some protection.
Yeah, dude.
But I guess it doesn't need to be Spencer Steer, because Tyler, man, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but it has not been great.
You can hear about it on last week's episode of Late Night Reds. If you want to just go ahead and we'll summarize it there. Tyler Stevenson talk.
Go listen to that, because it makes me cry to say bad things about Tyler Stevenson. So I won't do
me
it.
Me too.
He's shown a little bit of progress lately, it looks like. We'll see if he can sustain it. But we won't get too far into that. Moving on, I guess we do have a weekly Big Three update left. Nick Lodolo still injured. Probably not coming back for at least a month. I did find out today that there is a Spanish word, lodoso. It is in one letter away from Lodolo, and then it means muddy. And that is pretty much how I would describe Nick Lodolo experience in 2023. It's been pretty muddy.
How did you find this word?
There's people here know my wife now is Puerto Rican, so I've been trying to improve my Spanish. So I
Nate goes to Puerto Rico once and his life changed.
Hey, at this time next year, Nate's going to have the Espanol version of the riverfront. I'm going to love it.
Yeah, I spend 30 minutes on the phone with her mom, and it's coming out. But yeah, so the Lolo has been there was an article that came out that said he's been hurting since spring training, trying to fight through it until he noticed the pain was affecting his mechanics. So it's calf tendinosis initially is what they thought it was. Then they found out there's a stress reaction in the left tibia. Like I said, at least a month, currently walking in a boot and using a scooter to get around, making him the second most popular scooter the Reds have had in the last decade.
Nice.
So, So not too much to talk about. Nickel Dolan, just get well soon. We need you back. Hunter Green, we touched on his start. The Reds lost 1-4 in that one. We'll be seeing him again real soon against the Fuzzy Cubbies. And then my guy, Graham, it has been ugly for Graham Ashcraft lately. 5 innings pitched, 7 earned runs, 10 hits. May 23rd, 2 days ago against the Cards. His last 4 have all been pretty rough. He only allowed 1 home run in all of April, and he allowed 2 to Paul Goldschmidt in one day. He mentioned in a post-game thing about the mental part of the game kind of getting to him. Like he just lets things linger. I know I've talked about that on air a couple of times. He's mentioned it a couple of times. Carlos, maybe you can speak to that a little bit. Is that something that a lot of young pitchers go through? And how easy would you say it is to fix that?
I didn't catch that quote. What was he talking about mentally? Like what part of the mental?
He was saying that after he gave up one of the home runs to Paul Goldschmidt, they said it was a really good pitch. And he just kind of like stuck it out there, hit off the end of the bat, and it went over the fence.
Oh,
he
kind of just in-game.
Lost his composure. In-game, yes.
In-game. Yeah, that's like, man, he's old enough. He should be able to figure that out by now. Like, come on, dude.
He said that at least twice in post-game interviews.
You're a guy on a rookie contract trying to let the world know what you're worth. You cannot let that happen. If you give up a 2-run home run or off a broken bat, next guy gets on and hits a BS homer down the right field line, you got to let that go. You know, because that can turn into this. And you know how hard it's going to get back for him to get back to where he wants to be now? He's going to have to be all-star level for 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, to reach what he wants. So he's got to fix that quick and stop talking about it. He's got to be tipping pitches or something, because these swings that they're getting on him are heavy swings. You know, they're swinging hard. They're even those stolen bases. They got something from him. I mean, they were going right away off of him. So I'm like, okay, Reds. You know, Derek Johnson, let's go. You have to be able to see the same thing. Let's fix this. It's not like it just happened once. It's happened repeatedly, time after time. So jump on it. Figure it out. He's too good to be giving up, you know, those kind of hits and runs to this Cardinals, the rest of the Cardinals lineup behind Goldschmidt, whatever. Goldschmidt is going to kill any Reds pitcher. That he just owns the Reds. So it's like, whatever. But They need to figure that out quick.
Yeah, to your point, in the month of May, Graham Ashcraft is 0-3 with a 10.03 ERA in 5 starts. The 1.88 whip, which is one of my favorite stats, and if you're allowing almost 2 batters an inning to reach base, that's not good. And opposing hitters have a 1.017 OPS against Graham Ashcraft in the month of May. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows how much I love the guy, and I still have all the faith in the world, but it has been ugly.
I wonder what his ground ball rate, you know, through this month of May is. I'm sure it could easily be looked up, but the month of May to, you know, what is normally at, because I feel like he's not getting all that many.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact numbers. I definitely saw that it is
like, is he going for strikeouts more, maybe? Is he trying to get more strikeouts instead of ground ball?
You know, we got to mention too. I mean, obviously, the stats are the stats. They're ugly regardless. But one of those starts was at Coors Field. And mother of God, you know, as Carlos can attest, pitching there is miserable.
That was a wild one, too. He was lights out for 4 innings, untouchable.
That's true. Yeah, that's also going against my point, because he was really good for 4 innings.
I'm a terrible host. I did not mean to go against your point right after you.
No, that's great. That's why we podcast.
That's right. Well, let's go ahead and move on from that. We talked pre-show about flying through the first few things on the list, and we're 35 minutes in. So,
welcome to Podcasting with Tim.
I love it. The quick roster moves. TJ Friedel got back in the lineup. He's had a couple of good games since he got back with the game off in between. Henry Ramos went to the IL. Derek Law went to the IL. Connor Overton, Tommy John, it looks like he's out for the year. Carlos brought up a great point online. He's going to keep collecting that major league paycheck. So good for you, Connor. Probably wasn't getting that, you know, otherwise. Joey Votto. Let's get a little update on Joey real quick. And we did have a viewer mail question from Eric Market about that. Erica says, with the update on Joey Votto's rehab, when do you think he'll be back? Or is there a chance he doesn't play at all this year? He's back in Louisville taking live BPs. No rehab assignment yet unless something came out since I last checked. Tim, have you heard anything else about Mr. Votto and if we're going to see him anytime soon?
I haven't heard, but if he's back swinging again, you know, obviously he's a guy who's like been very open about not rushing back. I would not be shocked if we saw him back end of June, early July. I think that if he's the guy that, you know, if everything that says like this is going to be it, I don't think he wants his end of his correct tenure to be August of the year before his end of his contract. So,
yeah, it's pretty fair. Carlos, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I like that timeline from Tim. I think he's definitely going to play this year because he has to if he wants to play next year. I've said it repeatedly. This year is a tryout year for him. He needs to prove himself after last year and this injury so he can, you know, play next year, whether it's for the Reds or for the Padres or anybody else in the big leagues. But, no, seriously, I think – couple of weeks away maybe from starting a rehab assignment. I don't have any inside information on that. We don't really talk about that. But I think he's definitely going to play, and I like that timeline because he is, you know, hitting all different jugs machines and he's getting live BPs. But he's going to make sure that he's ready. He's not going to come in and use, you know, the first couple of weeks to get ready because these numbers are going to count right away for him. So that's where he's going to go. And, you know, unfortunately, the Reds are having the season that they're having. So that's why he's doing this. He's taking his time. If this was 5 years ago and, you know, the Reds were, you know, kind of close to the wild card, he would be back playing right now. It's my guess. But it's not. So,
well, let's keep in mind that he has been or he had been dealing with the pain that came that led to this surgery for a long, long time. He played through it for a long, long time, sacrificed his, you know, just his health, his pain tolerance for the betterment of this team that has not done anything to support their future Hall of Famer. So he has earned every single day that he wants to take to come up and perform at the level that he expects from himself. Because like Carlos just said, these stats are going to mean more to him than they are to anybody else on this major league roster. You don't get the luxury of a slow month at this point in his career, which he should. He should have all the luxury, all the runway that he wants, but that's not how life works sometimes, and that's not how our penny-pinching owners tend to handle things. Tim?
I told Carlos in the offseason, I got like really big into like a new workout routine. I was like, look, I'll sign whatever waiver. I'm not ever going to ask to be on the podcast. If I can set up one workout with Joey just so I could do like one gym run with him, I will sign anything to make sure like nothing's disclosed. And whatever, if I'm injured, he's not liable, but I got to do one gym run with Joey Votto.
It's not as intense as you would think. It's a lot of awkward, more like stretching and mobile and core kind of stuff.
I can get down with that.
Huh. You can use extra mobility.
Yeah, I'm not flexible at all. So
you got to sign up for a year of training with Joey to make it really worth it.
That would be a fantastic YouTube series.
Then we have to convince Joey to sign up for a year of training with you.
Going and seeing his gym is worth it alone, Tim.
I can imagine.
I love it. You get complimentary bean burgers in between sets. Yes, got it.
God almighty.
Love it. All right, so moving on. We covered the Reds just about enough for this episode. So let's get into the topic of the week. We decided to have a little fun. We know that our fearless leader, Chad Dotson, is a giant, giant movie buff, more so than anybody ever really should be. Some really cold takes if you follow him on Twitter. Just some egregious movie takes. So we are going to do a baseball movie draft on this episode. It's a gimmick that I stole from a podcast I saw a year or so ago, and I thought they did such a horrible job with their choices that I needed to run it back. And I got my two assassins on here with me. So how we're going to do this is there is, let's see here, six categories: best movie, best fictional player, best fictional coach, best scene, best Costner, which is just best Kevin Costner movie, and then a wild card, which can be any movie, scene, character, anything baseball related or adjacent in a movie whatsoever. This is going to be a snake draft. We'll do a randomly generated order here in just a second. You get one movie per category. You can draft from categories in whatever order you want to. You don't have to go in order of what our notes doc says. If you want to go wild card first, you can. And then you cannot repeat draftees, and you cannot draft two categories from the same, you can't draft the same movie for multiple categories. After we're done, I'll try to upload this. If people can listen on Twitter, can let us know who they think won the draft. I'm pretty sure it's going to be me because my opinion is usually correct.
Nate, do you have a Letterboxd account?
I do not. Every time I think about it, I realize that I value my time.
You'll have to tell me what that is later, Tim.
Okay.
No, it's a pretty cool thing. I'm probably going to do it soon. So I assume you do.
I love it. I'm hooked.
Well, I will get it so that I can rank these baseball movies. But let's do the random order generator real quick. Our names are typed in. And all right, Carlos, you are number one. Do you want the number one overall? Or do you want to get the number three wraparound? Or do you want number two and let somebody else set the tone?
I wish you would have gone on with that and just let me take number one. Now I'm thinking about it. There's no way this isn't going to take an hour, by the way.
Right.
It's going to be a two-part episode.
That's okay.
I'm just going to go with the number one pick. I'm going with, what are we going, best movie?
You can go whatever order you want. So if you think one category is super deep and you really like your number three, but you got another category that's really light and you don't want somebody to steal your number one, then you might want to go with that one first. So you can go with whatever category you want.
I like all my choices. They're all very, very good. I'm just going with best movie. I'm going with Major League as the best movie.
Okay.
That's my favorite. That's my personal favorite. I love it. Quote the whole thing.
I think that's probably the favorite. I think that's probably the one seed for best movie.
Yeah, I think daily I quote it. Most people don't know what I'm talking about, especially my wife. She still hasn't caught on yet, but I love it.
Very, very solid pick. Tim, you are actually number two in the random order generator, so you're up next.
Ooh.
So he has to go best movie now?
No, he can go. He can still go wherever he wants.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I see what you're doing. Okay. All right. So fictional player. I'm going to go a little under the radar here.
Okay.
Does anyone remember a god terrible shitty movie that Robert De Niro did with Wesley Snipes called The Fan?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna go with Wesley Snipes' character in that film, Bobby Rayburn, who is basically modeled after Barry Bonds. But Bobby Rayburn is my fictional player that I'm taking.
Okay. I like that a lot. So I am up now with the number three, the wraparound pick. Bobby Rayburn, not even on my list. That's pretty good. So let's see here. I am going to go because this is the weakest of all the categories for me. I'm going to go best Kevin Costner off the jump. Mm. And I'm going to say Bull Durham and Crash Davis.
Very nice. Yeah.
Very nice. I think that's got to be the consistency, right?
Yeah.
Is that your number one too, Tim? Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to take that. Get that off the board for you guys, because I know how y'all are. Y'all sniping stuff over there.
I know how y'all are.
Yeah.
I'm going to mix it up a little bit, too. You know what? I'm not. I'm going back to best movie. For me, my best movie, The Sandlot.
I like it.
Got to be done. It hits every box. If you were a kid who played baseball, how could you not love Sandlot? If you were a kid who grew up loving smokeless tobacco, never mind. Sorry. dogs. It's got girls. I mean, Wendy Peppercorn was one of my first crushes. Mm-hmm. Some very awkward moments in school when that got played. I don't know. Been a lot.
Which character are you? If you had to play one of those, which one?
Ooh, I was Squints for Halloween one year.
Oh, okay. I like nice. That. I wasn't good enough to be. I was kind of a chubby kid in my early days, and I did play catcher. So I am
Porter.
I'm definitely Porter.
Nice.
I don't feel good about that now. Okay. I filled out. All right, so Tim, you're up.
All right, so for my movie, because I'm such a baseball historian, or I just love the history of the game, obviously. I'm going to go 42. One, ooh. Chadwick Boseman rules and is gone too soon. He was an unbelievable actor. The movie is really, really cool. And the way they kind of did a bunch of stuff for the film, including shooting the scenes for Crosley Field, I thought was really impressive. I thought the cast was great. The guy from Friday Night Lights that played Pee Wee Reese, I never remember his name, was really good. And Harrison Ford as Branch Dickey. Anytime you have Harrison Ford in a movie, you're automatically like high in my book. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, a big, really, really enjoyed 42. I think it's a really good movie.
But I got to question the value of that pick. I think you could have got 42 for best movie much later in the draft.
I probably could have, yes, but.
So best movie's done with, right?
Best movie's done. We have all picked. Carlos, you got two in a row. Bobby Rayburn, though, was a great pick.
I was going to say, how many people are going to know what I'm mentioning there? Well, you two and Chad.
I'm pro all things Wesley Snipes.
I'm going to go with best scene, Naked Gun.
Oh, Nielsen, yes!
The umpire. I saw that again today. It's like almost 4 minutes long, and it's just constant laughter the entire time.
God, Leslie Nielsen.
This movie barely qualifies as a baseball movie. I had it under my rankings for wild card. That was definitely in play for me. I love it. Fantastic baseball movie. Pick.
Yeah, there's too much Reggie Jackson in it for it not to be a baseball movie.
So you mentioned that. So does anyone know? The TV series that led to Naked Gun, Police Squad, with Leslie Nielsen, super funny. I think it literally was on for one season. They have a scene with Tommy Lasorda in there. So that started the baseball run of this series, of that franchise.
I love it. This is the kind of hard-hitting analysis you come to the Riverfront for. All right, Carlos, you're up again. It gets tough as you get down the list.
I really appreciate that Carlos like did some work on this too.
That's true. I can't tell if he doesn't know that he's muted or he's just.
Yeah, I didn't know I was muted. Good, because I was cussing. I didn't know what the hell.
He accidentally saved this from being a rated R episode. I love it.
I'm going to go with best manager. I'm going to go with Jimmy Duggan.
Ooh. I was hoping he would call me. Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Fantastic value at this point in the draft. I love that pick. So many legendary scenes. I don't want to talk too much about the scenes because they might come up later. Tom Hanks and Jimmy Duggan, just fantastic, fantastic pick.
That might be like my favorite category. Like, I love my three managers.
Yeah.
The podcast that I stole this from did not have a fictional coach category. And that was one correction that I knew we needed to make.
Absolutely.
All right, Tim, back to you. My number three stinks. It's so long.
I'm taking my wild card here because this movie freaking rules. And the wild card is anything related to baseball in a scene in a movie, correct?
That's correct.
All right. I'm going with the heist scene in the town when they try to rob Fenway Park.
Ooh.
Bro, that movie is like so amazing and so good. And that scene when they're like The Town with Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy Renner. And so, like, when they go to the game the night before and they're, like, sitting in the stands at Fenway and they're, like, breaking everything down, like, not that I'm going to go, like, rob something because I would definitely get caught. I'm the most obvious human being alive. But well, you get pretty fired up. Yeah. Now you get pretty fired up. So,
tell them about
taking the scene from The Town. Yeah.
I love it. I don't think that would have got drafted, but I don't even care because that's a fantastic thing. All right, next up, I'm going to go with my fictional coach. I don't want to let this slide, and I'm going to go with – oh, man, this is tough. I'm going to go with Lou Brown in Major League.
That was my number two.
I had a close runner-up that if I wasn't trying to win this draft, I want people to let me know that I outdrafted you two. If that wasn't the case, then I was going to pick somebody else. And if he doesn't get drafted, then I'll talk about him later. But I think Lou Brown, Major League, is pretty solid.
Yes.
All right, I get to go again. Let's see. I'm going to go best scene. And I can't pick this movie twice, so I'm not going to. I will go with the no crying in baseball scene, Little Big League. I think it transcends the sport. League of Their Own.
I was going to like, hold on.
My number two is from Little Big League. League of Their Own, it transcends baseball. People that have never even watched the game know that line. Great movie, great character. No crying in baseball for best scene.
For sure. That's used everywhere by every coach, every little league coach, every little league coach. Don't cry in baseball.
All right, Tim, you're up.
All right, so my best manager, I'm going with the legend Gary Busey as Chet Steadman in Rookie of the Year.
Nice.
Now,
good one.
Is he a manager? Is he a player?
I think he was the manager, wasn't he?
I think he was the veteran pitcher that came out for like.
Did I screw this up?
This is the slime.
That's the slime. Yep, you're right.
Ooh, that's gonna hurt on the rankings, Tim.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. I lost.
I did have another manager from that movie as my number two.
All right. In that case, I'll take the kid from Little Big League as my manager.
Great pick.
But how did he not know to walk Ken Griffey Jr. in a must-win game? Come on now, kid.
He just got his tips from David Bell. Billy Haywood was the name of that coach, that young fella and coach. Man, I used to pride myself on my Reds knowledge when I was too young to care about such things. And watching Little Big League was my absolute dream scenario. Like the kid that gets to be the GM, owner GM, and then coach of a big league team. I love that movie. I think it's the most realistic baseball played in any of the movies that we're going to talk about. Because they had like the guys were athletes, even if they weren't baseball players. It was really good. Plus, you get Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson in that game. It was great. I love Little Big League. All right, two picks in a row for Carlos. Carlos, you still need best fictional player, best Kevin Costner, and wild card.
I'm going to go best player, and I'm going to go with Kelly Leak. There's no way that guy was 12 years old. I mean, he was dominant from the get-go, showing up in his own motorcycle. Mm-hmm. He's got the chicks, got the smokes. Everything he hit went over the fence. It was just unbelievable.
I love it.
Taking fly balls from his teammates.
Very good pick.
And then what do I have? I need a
best Costner or wild card.
I'm going to go with Field of Dreams. That's my number two.
See, I think that's a solid pick. Sorry, Tim, you're getting last in
best. I like that movie though. So that worked out. So
it's true. Tim's going to have to choose what I think is the best baseball date movie. Very solid pick. I mean, Field of Dreams has become a bit polarizing lately. And a lot of baseball fans that are out on Field of Dreams, which I always find weird. It's a It's a great film, whether you think it's the end all be all or not. How can you not care a little bit, especially when the Reds play in the Field of Dreams game? I love it.
It represents that sport far better than Hoosiers represents basketball. Okay, I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. Hoosiers sucks.
Those
all right,
are facts. Wait, no, they're not facts.
Yeah, Hoosiers.
They call watching the paint dry. All right, moving on. We got Tim. You are up next. You still need best scene and best Costner.
All right. Well, we know what my Costner's going to be, so I can save that for the last round, obviously. So for best scene, I'm going to stick to the same movie Carlos just referenced and hit one of his last picks. And I'm going to go with the infamous, "Hey, Yankees, you can take your trophy and your apology and shove it up your ass," from Bad News Bears.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Bad News Bears. It's time for a Bad News Bears rewatch. Maybe that's a podcast we should definitely do. Still Tim's idea, dude. But baseball movie rewatches. I love it.
That's a good idea.
All right, so it's time for my last two. I still need best fictional player and best wild card. There is nobody left in player, so I'll go ahead and take mine. And I'm surprised he lasted this long. But I'm going to have to go with – oh, no, I already picked that movie. Yeah. All right, I'm gonna mix up. Steve Nebraska.
Nice.
He is the closest thing that we have to a Shohei Ohtani. Two-way player. I mean, I don't know what else you could want. All right, one more, and this is my wild card. This is a tough one. I'm going to get weird with it. And I am going to go with – this is stretching the rules a little bit, but they're my rules, so I can do it. Inglourious Bastards, the Bear Jew.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see what you're doing.
He utilizes a baseball bat in a way that I think we can all support. Anytime you use baseball to eliminate Nazis – that's a win.
Nazis.
In my book.
So, I guess that leaves my Costner, which is For the Love of the Game, which I just looked up as you were talking, Nate. And the order in which the Costner movies were drafted, apparently, according to Rotten Tomatoes, is 1,000,000% correct. Bull Durham is a 97. Field of Dreams is an 88. For the Love of the Game is a 44.
Really?
That low? Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
I didn't either.
What's the audience score on that one? Is that, you say Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah. So Rotten Tomatoes was a 47. Audience score was like a 42.
Oh, no.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I guess nobody really likes pitchers. They want to see homers or something.
Yeah. Like in baseball cards, pitchers are like not worth anything. You could have like Nolan Ryan rookies and it's like, okay, whatever.
I should have mentioned that. My Steve Nebraska pick was from The Scout, by the way, for anybody that was unfamiliar with that one.
I definitely was. I definitely was, in case you didn't notice from my facial expressions. I was like, oh, yeah, good pick. Like,
I should have got more support from that one.
I love Shohei
Ohtani. In the Shohei Ohtani era, I feel like that picked for me more. There is another guy that I think probably should got picked. Has everybody got best player? Yeah, we didn't touch Benny the Jet Rodriguez. That was tough. All right, we'll get to some of the honorable mentions later. Yeah. Last pick of the draft is Carlos for wild card, which is how every draft should end.
I'm going with the movie Life.
Tell me more.
You don't remember this? I mean, with King Get-Right?
I don't think I know the movie at all.
You've never seen the movie Life with Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence, Bernie Mac?
Oh my gosh, how have I not seen this?
You need to go. That's the next movie you need to watch, sir.
Oh, wow. I didn't know we were in a movie together.
Amazing. Yeah. So Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy get thrown in jail and they're trying to get out. And there's, you know, a scene, a pretty good chunk in there where this guy named King Get-Right.
Shoot. I have seen that. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'll be that baby's pappy.
I'm that baby pappy.
Okay, yeah. It's great, such a great movie. Great, fantastic draft ending pick. I love it. All right, quick rundown. For best movie, I had Sandlot. Tim said 42. Carlos with Major League. Best fictional player, I went Steve Nebraska. Tom, Bobby Rayburn. Carlos, Kelly Leak.
Tom?
Tim, sorry. Love you.
Just go with it, Ted.
Come on, Theo. I'm on tall glass of wine number two, so give me a break. Best fictional coach, I went Lou Brown. Tim went Billy Haywood. Carlos went Jimmy Dugan. Such a great pick. Best scene, I said No Crying in Baseball. Tim went Bad News Bears. The Yankees can shove it. And then Carlos, the Naked Gun umpire scene. Another great pick. Carlos, I might vote for you.
I was going to say.
Best costner, I said Bull Durham. Tim, For the Love of the Game, which if you are trying to get your wife or partner into baseball, For the Love of the Game is the only way to do it. Women love that movie. Carlos, Field of Dreams. And then Wild Card, I went with The Bear Jew. Tim went with The Town, the Fenway scene, which is awesome. And Carlos, Life, Martin Lawrence, Eddie Murphy, and Bernie Mac, which I had completely forgot that I watched about 2 years ago and is hysterical. Pretty fantastic drafts, boys. I'm happy with it. Just some categories I feel like we should mention. Benny the Jet for best player we touched on. Roy Hobbs, maybe.
That guy was pretty good.
I also want to mention at least Dottie Henson and Marla Hooch from the league.
I had Dottie Henson as my number two. Yeah, she was a flat out leader and she raked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been one of those squad. Legendary picks that just take you to the finals. Best coach, Tim, you mentioned this movie. You incorrectly picked a player coach, but Phil Brigma, Daniel Stern, yeah. The pitching coach in Rookie of the Year.
Yes. If it would have been just flat out coach, that would have been my pick. Like not the manager or whatever.
Too good. What were some of the best here. Scenes?
The seeds.
It's too good. What are some of the scenes that didn't get mentioned that you guys had on your list?
Go ahead, Tim.
Obviously, the catch scene at the end of Field of Dreams is a big one. Yeah. I do, you know, we mentioned a little Big League earlier. I used to always love the scene when Ken Griffey Jr. hits the home run and he winks at the third baseman as he's going the corner.
I love the hidden ball trick scene in that one and the runaround Sue montage in that one.
Yeah.
Both really good.
Yeah, and low-key, love Field of Dreams, love Fever Pitch. I know it's a terrible movie, but I love it. But the scene at the end when Drew Barrymore jumps down and is like running and she's like trying to like do the whole thing where she confesses and he's like, what was the field like? Was it like perfectly soft? And it's like everything I would do.
That's fair.
I went pure comedy, man. I had Major League 2 whenever Vaughn was a starter and he started getting just rocked all over the field. Bob Uecker was going off, and they're like one of the last ones. You know, it's the famous line. He's going to need a rocket up his ass if he wants to catch that one.
Wild thing, you make my butt sting.
Randy Quaid's like the best part of that movie.
Yeah, that might be right. Any other ones?
And then I had the Bull Durham whenever everybody meets on the mound and goes through all their problems.
Ooh, that's a great scene there. Fantastic one. I forgot about that one. Let's do it. Yeah. I had when Crash Davis gives up the pitch.
Yeah.
He said, when you speak up, me speak well. I love that one.
That's good. That one's iconic.
Yeah. This one didn't really fit the theme of the episode for me. It didn't fit the vibe of the episode. But whenever they pretend to see angels and angels of the outfield, I mean, when you're a kid watching that movie for the first time.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Goosebumps Central. Sandlot when they pickle the beast. The floater in Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Floater, mm-hmm. Pretty great.
We call that an ephus now.
Buttermaker for manager. He was in my top three.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
I still aspire to be like him. I'm working on it.
Very, very good. Some wild card nominees, and this is just because if nobody's seen it, they need to. Everybody Wants Some, the Richard Linklater film. It's about a just kind of follows a guy through a journey of his college baseball season in his freshman year. Fantastic movie. Highly recommend. And then just because it's not a category, but I want to talk about it. Worst scene in baseball movie history when I think it's Freddie Prinze Jr. leaves the perfect game to go check out Jessica Biel or whichever girl it was. I don't care who you are. No athlete in the history of baseball is going to leave a perfect game to go catch their girlfriend.
Nope.
Your mom, maybe. But a girlfriend.
My mom?
Your
mom.
All right, it's a fantastic draft, guys. I'm going to post these onto Twitter sometime tomorrow, probably, and or today as people listen to this. And let us know who you think won. Sound off in the comments. That was a lot of fun. I can't wait for Chad to get mad at me when he finds out we did this with Allie.
Oh, man. Yeah.
This is the Don't Tell Chad We Did This episode, remember?
I told Chad that he's going to be mad. I didn't tell him why.
We need to do a the all-time baseball video game draft now. We need a solid RBI baseball, backyard baseball, Ken Griffey Jr.'s winning run.
Ken Griffey Jr. baseball was fantastic, though.
Oh, my God, it's the best.
Barry Larkin's character, I think they call him D. Hammett in the game.
Yep. Love. You can edit the players' names.
All right, we do have some viewer mail questions. We want to run through these pretty quick. We are already over an hour here, but we can knock these out. As always, these are from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. Join the family. We have a good time. First question from Mike Perry. I'm not concerned about the sophomore season struggles of the big three pitchers. However, I am concerned at the Reds' apparent lack of a backup plan to those three, especially taking into account their injury histories. Where is your confidence level in the team's ability to produce a competitive team if two of the three don't pan out for some reason? Carlos, would you take this one?
Oh, it's pretty low, man. It's pretty low. And what they have coming up immediately from AAA, like, you know, congratulations to Brandon Williamson for being called up. I don't think the guy's it. I really don't see it at all. I think he's going to get away with it with a few, you know, early outings here. But the control, the being in the middle of the zone, the not throwing very hard, that you've got to be so accurate if you're throwing 92, 93 miles an hour in today's game. That is batting practice speed. Maybe not 93, but like, you know, a little lower than that. But it's just, I don't see that there. They're going to have to get outside help if they want to be competitive. And so we'll see what happens there in the offseason. But yeah, to answer that question, outside the top three, if one of them is gone for a while, they're screwed.
Yeah, the way the roster is currently constructed, I completely agree. My confidence level is super low. Tim, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, after Andrew Abbott, you know, you're looking at A-ball. And that's, you know, Chase Petty just came back to Dayton. He pitched really well yesterday. But, yeah, like that gap between Andrew Abbott to Chase Petty, as far as talent, maybe not big of a gap, but like ready to pitch the next level, not promising.
Yeah, they're going to have to do some work in free agency, and I don't know. That's where my faith kind of runs out a little bit. Like, I'm willing to believe that there is a plan, but hopefully they prove that to us. James Urban is our next question. He says, great week for Chad to be gone since he's dead to me after last week. That is a reference to Chad saying James Urban's like 45 years old or something. Question for you guys. Is there any Nick Senzel hope left in the tank, or is it all gone? Tim?
Yes! Yes, there is. Come on now, people. You know who you're talking to when it comes to Nick Senzel right here, right? I said it on my show this week. I know he had a little bit of a rough stretch there through about 50, 54 at-bats. But big picture, you know, besides the obvious that he's on the field, I think you got to be happy with what you've got from him. You know, he's running the bases well. I don't think he has a ton of steals necessarily, but, you know, he's playing a solid third base. Do I think he is the future at that position with everything they have coming up? No, probably not. But I am pleased overall with what we've gotten from him. And I think that, you know, that St. Louis series, he was pretty good. I mean, they had the walk-off, but he had two hits that game as well. He randomly played left field yesterday and played it all right.
The hell is that about?
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, I still believe in Nick Senzel. You know, I just hate that it's probably going to be for another team at some point.
I absolutely still have a little bit of Senzel hope in my tank. I'd be lying. If he has a horrible rest of the year, then that tank might run dry. But I've got some for now, because every time he has a two-hit game, even if it's two CNI singles and a walk or something, or an official score, give me a bonus. I don't care. I get fired up because I want it to happen so much. Carlos, any Senzel thoughts?
I'm probably a little less confident than you guys. His last seven games have been really bad. His last 15 games haven't been that great.
Let me step in real quick. He didn't say confidence. He said hope.
Well,
I have very little confidence, but I've got a lot of hope.
I mean, he's a role player pretty much, I guess, on a good team. As right now, something would have to really spark. He would have to play like he did whenever he first got, called back up, or whenever he got activated again, where he just kind of went off. I hope that he could do that for a long time. I just don't think it's sustainable for him.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely looked better this year than we've seen him in a while. He is one hot stretch away from having really, really fun numbers, but he's a continued cold stretch away from those numbers looking pretty grim. So we'll keep an eye on it, but there is still some hope. Hooper Powell says, does this ownership realize how many more butts in the stands they would have if they brought up Ellie? Or is the real reason they do not want such a high plumbing bill? What a crappy organization. If it came out that they were not bringing up some of these young studs because the water bill at Great American Ballpark was too high, it would probably lead to a new billboard. But
it would just be like Wrigley Field, where they don't have running water in their urinals. It just sits there.
Trough. Joe Thompson's favorite trough. But this question is great. Like, it's a good time to talk about it as any. What are they waiting on? What does Ellie De La Cruz specifically have to prove? You can convince me that Christian Encarnacion Strand needs to learn how to see more pitches, or get more walks or something, even though he's taking pitches a foot off the plate and hitting them into the opposite field for singles and doubles. Ellie De La Cruz has no holes in his game right now. He's walking at a high clip. Strikeouts are way down. He's hitting for power from both sides of the plate. He's stealing bases. The only thing that I want to prepare everybody for with Ellie is he has a whole lot of extra base hits right now. They're going to be singles in the major leagues because he's so fast that he takes ground ball screamers into right field into doubles. I don't know. What are we waiting on for these young guys? Is there something other than some sort of super two manipulation keeping these guys out of the biggies?
Well, I think the big thing for Ellie was walks, right? And then he turned into Barry Bonds.
That was the best walker in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, man. It's like I'm starting to reach like conspiracy theory points. I'm like, well, I think maybe they're just waiting to spread these guys out so they can keep fans interested. McLean's first. And then June's going to be Ellie. And then July will be CES. And then, just one at a time.
The good news is June is a week from now, so I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't see, why? If he's not up here, they're unserious. Because you can't tell me those guys that they're running out there are better than him and give him a better chance to win.
No, that's one thing that I think is obvious. They are
They think he needs to learn that much in AAA that he can't learn that in the big leagues? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. There's got to be some crazy reasoning.
There's got to be a reason, because it's obvious that the best version of the Cincinnati Reds has Ellie De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion Strand on it.
Absolutely. Right.
What sucks is we can't get the question asked. Nobody will ask David Bell. Nobody will ask Carl. They'll say, when can we expect to see him? And then they just drop it at that. No, why? This guy is better than so-and-so and so-and-so. He's showing so much. He's doing this. What are we waiting for? The team's 4.5 games out of the wild card or whatever it is. Why? Those questions aren't being asked, and that's so annoying. And I know it's because of Rob Butcher, but whatever.
Yeah, Ellie needs to be back. Bees be up here by the Brave series.
Open invitation. Nick Kroll, David Bell, anybody in the Castellini family, even the Mansion Maid. Open invitation. Come on the podcast.
Oh, by the way, how great was it whenever Matt McLean's mom is the one who revealed that he was getting called up?
Is the earliest news has gotten leaked.
He got in trouble for that.
on Mother's Day too. I love it. I love it. All right, next question from Joey Gadisa, our friend from the land of Canada.
Joey.
He says, can we move on from Will Myers, please? Just as soon see Barrero get his at-bats and play the outfield as much as possible. What say you guys? I also get, though, that they'll march him out there because of his contract. Ugh. You know what? I'm going to go first on this one. I get it. He has been bad. But the Reds have proven that they are not prioritizing winning baseball games at this point in the season. They're not trying to compete for a wild card or a division title. So why not run out the one-year rental in hopes that he can get hot for a month and a half and you can trade him for something? Because other than that, it's just flush money down the drain.
I mean, it'd be nice if he'd show a reason or two to run him out there. Like,
for sure.
Run into a couple of home runs in one series.
Which he's done almost his entire career. Yeah. He's been an above average.
I thought he was going to be decent. I thought he was going to really hit some balls. But I don't know.
I was excited when they signed him.
I don't want to see him take at bats away from Kevin Newman. I know that.
Who does?
You're canceled. Get Carlos out of here. I will agree with Joe, though. I don't want to see him taking at bats away from Jose Barrero. He can take all the at bats away from the Kevin Newmans and Henry Ramoses of the world, but I don't think he should take a single at bat away from Jose Barrero, who has been bad. But he has at least a modicum of a chance of contributing to this team in the future, and these other guys do not.
Do we have to play the song here, or is that just my show?
It's just your
show. We can go hard in the paint. We can go hard in the paint.
You can sing it. You can sing it, Tim.
All right, next question from Nathan Connor. Question for Carlos. As good as the Rays are, they really seem to deal with a ton of injuries to their pitchers, and this year's no exception. When you look at how our Cincinnati Reds manage their arms throughout the organization, do you think there is something to their philosophy, which is maybe better for the health of the player, but coming at the expense of short-term results on the field? Nathan, I apologize if I misinterpret how you are asking this question. I think what he's asking is, are the Rays maximizing on-field performance, but at the risk of an increased injury risk to their players, while the Reds are prioritizing health over big league performance?
Have the Rays do they have like an alarming rate of injuries for starting pitching or what?
I know last year they were neck and neck with the Reds for the most injured teams in the bigs, and I think that they are the most injured team in the bigs this year.
I mean, there are weird things that goes on in the minor leagues. I mean, definitely. I went through it with several GMs that I had in my minor league career that, you know, make you piggyback, starters piggyback. They, you know, do weird things and philosophies. There could be something to that. I would be really surprised that the Reds would do anything to not maximize the ability of their pitchers. Because, you know, everybody's throwing so hard, it's almost inevitable that you're going to get hurt now. But
that's the pitch clock.
That's definitely not going to help. Man, I'm worried about the second half of the season when these guys start tearing down, you know, dog days of summer, and then we're still asked on the same pitch clock, and it's going to catch up. But yeah, to answer his question, there could be. I have no idea. I haven't heard anything about the Reds, you know, doing anything different out of the norm than any other minor league organization. So
all I'll say to that is I have no idea, but Nathan, it's kind of rude that you just ask a question directly to Carlos. Me and Tim are just chopped liver. I appreciate
fair.
That.
It's fair.
Just kidding, Nathan. We love you. Next question from Brandon Kamick. If we typically hug the average prospect, what do we do with Ellie equitable to his elite prospect status? Fantastic question. I'm going to say a consensual massage, not one of those Deshaun Watson massages. I'm talking like shoulders only with his permission if he wants.
He gets one of those Eddie Murphy coming to America Bass.
Yeah, oh man,
I think the royal
is clean, Your Highness.
Tim, you got to follow up there.
How do I follow that? I don't think I can.
I love it. All right, last question from Seth Shainer. Seth says, "Greetings from Great American Ballpark. Given the situation this year, what percentage of effort should be given to try to take a series from the dirty Cardinals? Can't they give the fans at least a little bit of what they want?" This is a fun question, I think. I went on a pretty big rant last week about how, based on the Seth Shainer question, actually. The Reds, this weird back and forth, this divide between trying to win, which David Bell seems to be doing sometimes, and planning for the future, which the front office tries to be doing, we hope, sometimes, has been really, really frustrating from a fan standpoint. You just want to see the best players in the organization on the field if they are going to contribute, especially when it comes to a team like the Cardinals. I don't think that they did anything against in this Cardinals series other than bringing up Ellie and CES that could have given them much of a better chance.
I mean, the roster, the lineup construction really didn't help either. Several times we're just puzzled, like, what?
Anytime there's some Newman involved, I'm confused, even though every time that I complain in public about Kevin Newman being in the lineup, he has a huge game. So maybe I should do that more often.
Right.
There you go.
But Seth, to answer your question, I think, yeah, they should do everything they can to win a four-game set against our most hated rivals. Especially because it's equally frustrating. If you ask Reds fans, who do you hate the most? They say the Cardinals. And you ask Cardinals fans, who do you hate the most? They say the Cubs. like, it's not fun for us. So I don't know. Yeah, I think they should do everything they can to try to win these series. And they should bring these kids up. Tim, what do you think?
I mean, I said earlier, the Cardinals suck. They're terrible. So, like, you should want to beat teams you're better than. I don't know if they're necessarily better than them. But, you know, you can make the case.
They suck less.
Right. Yeah. You can definitely make the case for the Reds. You make the case the Reds suck less than the Cardinals, at least in the rotation. Oh, my God.
Yeah, big facts. Carlos, any thoughts on that one?
I've got nothing on that, man.
Yeah, just put your best players out there. I love the prospects. I love the guys that Nick Kroll got back if he – in fact, had to get rid of those guys. We've talked about this 1,000 times. I want the best players to be in the Major League roster because I am a Cincinnati Reds fan. I support the Chattanooga Lookouts and the Tortugas and all the other minor league teams, but I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan, and I want to see them win. That's when I'll be happy. All right, so that is going to do it for this week's episode. Guys, any final thoughts? Tim, let the people know where else they can find you.
Well, here. Sunday nights, 9 o'clock, live. Sometimes I find guests. Sometimes I don't.
Got to go check out Tim's live show. Such a fun dynamic. Love getting on there, mixing it up. My boy Pat McGooch causing a ruckus.
Hey, brother Pat.
Comments always good. Tim, you were on there by yourself. You were solo last week, and it was still awesome. But you did great work. So go check out Tim at Late Night Reds. Go meet him at the collectible shop. My man's crushing it. Having a good time as well. Carlos, any parting thoughts for everybody?
Get Ellie up here. Let Cincinnati at least be excited about something. They're fiending for it. Reds fans are fiending for it. Just bring him up. Give us something, please.
Give us bat flips. Get him throwing the 44 up to the dugout when he hits 450-foot bombs over the scoreboard like he did today. Could not agree more. Let the kids play. And yeah, that's going to do it for us at the Riverfront. If you get a second, go check out Chad's latest column over at Cincinnati Magazine. He does a deep dive on Alexis Diaz, who we didn't mention once in this episode until now. Just dominating for the Reds. Strong argument to be one of the best relievers the Reds have ever seen. Small sample size, we know. Go check that out, though. It's great stuff. And thank you to everyone for listening and supporting the Riverfront. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your kids. Please remember to subscribe to the show either on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app. For Tim Daniel, for Carlos Guevara, this is Nate Dotson saying, take it easy.